everybody, and welcome to the Stargirl Squadcast. I'm Cameron.
I'm Adiba.
And I'm Tam.
Today, we are talking about episode 8 of season 3, Infinity Inc. Part 2. This episode was okay. It was fine.
This episode was simply something that very clearly had a lot of other things going on in it. Yeah, that made it quite interesting to watch at this particular part of season 3.
I just didn't like it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a combination of three things. Number one, it feels like a filler episode because most of your main cast is not in it. It's just Pat and Courtney. Like, even Mike and Barbara in it are just like shadow versions of them, so they barely count. Every other character is a guest or recurring character. So it's like, inherently, you're not going to get anything done that's relevant to the main plot. Number two, it was like a backdoor pilot for like some Infinity Inc. spinoff that they're gonna try to do, or maybe not Infinity Inc., that's the wrong word, like Helix Six. Spinoff. Yeah. Or alternatively, Jenny and Todd go to New York with the Shade. Like, that, it felt like a backdoor pilot for that. And then to me, it felt like it was basically a season 2 episode. Like, I could feel exactly where they should have put this episode.
Yep.
Because if you put this exact episode in place of 211, so instead of Courtney going to the Shadowlands by herself, it's Courtney and Pat, I guess.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Exactly, yeah.
If you had that experience, and then you just had Jenny working it out with Todd minus Courtney.
And then you would have, like, that would be a season 2 episode. Shade having to work together to bring them both out, which would strengthen their relationship, right, as like friends. Right. And it would explain why the Shade actually would really want to help her, and why the betrayal of Shade betraying them would sting more. Yep. No, that was before. The betrayal was before. But the point is, it would actually be like his fake death scene would have more weight because he really did help Barbara when she was quote unquote all alone. Right, so yeah, all of that stuff could have been reduced to an episode in season 2.
Yeah,
especially agreed. Because I feel like if we at least got Jenny and Todd to join the JSA, then we would have had something out of it because we would have gotten some like background and personalities developed for the JSA to join. Like, so the team would get a little bit bigger, but they didn't. Like, they left. So again, it's like, stop, yeah. Jenny, stop leaving challenge.
I don't know why she has to leave every single time. But, like, I don't know. It's just, part one was so good that, like, part two is just, like, if I'm watching this season again, like, front to back, I'll watch it. But I'm never going to be like, I really need to see that one episode again. Like, there's not one thing, I don't think, from this episode that's like, I need to see that again. Which is disappointing, because
there's a few, like, cinematic shots that are just really nicely done. So, like, if I can see them in, like, GIFs or whatever, I'll be happy. Like, Jenny waking up.
The Jenny waking up was a really nice shot. And even Courtney
waking up at the very beginning is also pretty nice. Like, it looks nice. And, like, the green flames in the Shadowlands are pretty cool.
It also was, you said it was apparently also, like, super short. It was another 38-minute I believe. So,
oh, yeah. Why are the episodes, like, so short?
They're not always so short. I think this was conceived as a two-parter, so it was probably one mega episode, maybe, at the one point that they clipped down. Or maybe it was always two episodes, and it was just two short ones. I don't know. But it's like, where are the 4 extra minutes of content? Like, you couldn't have slipped in, like, base JSA at the end.
They should doing have something. They should have,
but literally anything.
The funny thing too, though, is that with the shortness and everything with these episodes, because it's like a part one, part two thing. The last time we had a part one, part two was Shiv part one, part two, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
Was there something that was a really, really, really strong two-parter? Like, stuff happened, and I feel like because the first thing that they introduced for the season was literally these episodes, we were anticipating that a lot of movement for the JSA would go down in these two episodes, and that's why it would be a two-parter. But technically, again, the only person who really gains anything out of this two-parter that's, like, part of the main cast is Courtney and Pat, which is fine on a one level.
Neither of who are neither in of them Infinity are Infinity Inc. Inc.
Yeah, they're not Infinity Inc. characters.
They're not. So
it's like, no.
No.
Then what was all this?
No.
It's, well, it's called
Mr. So, okay, Bones. It's probably they're talking about Jenny and Todd. Presumably they're talking about Jenny and Todd.
Okay.
But
and,
like,
and technically Mr. Bones and
yeah, like, Mr. Bones as well.
The evil people we thought were evil, like, aren't even evil. So what actually went down?
Well, they're not great.
I mean, they're not like the best people, but they're not like the big bad that we thought that they were.
No, and we're still like technically in the dark on that, which is pretty wild for over halfway through your season.
Yeah, but,
like, it is like, a murder mystery, so they can't have us with no mystery, or else it's kind of over, I guess.
I guess that's true, but if they're introducing some guy from the comics, like if you read the comics, then that's one thing. You're trying to solve like a meta mystery of who this person could be. Mm-hmm. If you have no knowledge of that. Yeah. What is the mystery other than it's some guy?
Yeah, you're so right.
You know what I mean? Like, they're like that doesn't. Well, I know. So that's what I'm saying. It's like your mystery is it's somebody that you have no framework for.
So there's no clue, and there's no ability for you to put together those clues at all. Like, you couldn't solve that by yourself. So it's like, well, what was the point? Yeah, I feel like in general, superhero media needs to be careful of that because it can be very hard to just decide I want to watch this TV show or movie or pick up this comic book and be expected to be able to juggle all of the characters and their plot points and their backstories and their relationships when you don't know anything because they expect you to. Like, I'm sorry, but DC and Marvel too, they're just such huge universes that you can't possibly expect someone to be able to just, you know, pick that stuff up, even if they are like big fans, you know. Like it's just, it's not always possible. So, yeah.
But I guess we should just start.
Yeah, let's just jump right into it.
Yeah, so obviously we are starting off with the Shade and Pat in the Shadowlands, and the Shade doesn't have his full ability because they're still corrupted dubiously by Jenny's ring. So this is going to be really... We are going to sound okay. We need to
listen. If this was your favorite episode of the season, I'm so sorry, because it just, to be very frank, it was not for us. So as we're trying to go through this, you know, we don't have maybe our usual enthusiasm just because we're so desperate for context, we are extremely excited for next week's episode.
Yes,
and we know
yes.
we have to get through this.
We should really preface by saying that every single minute between now and really between when the stills dropped on Wednesday and next Wednesday is filled with constant excruciating mental pain.
Yeah.
Give us that juice. We need it.
We want it. We need it to survive. But if you're listening to this before you're watching next episode, maybe we'll talk a little bit about why we're so excited for next week.
Oh, yeah. That would be fun.
Maybe.
So hopefully you have that for at the end of this episode. Or, I mean, yeah. if you're listening to this, well, I'm not going to recommend that you just fast forward.
Yeah, no, you can just scrub through. It'll sound like, Jenny, Courtney, Pat, yeah.
Okay. So, but returning to the Shadowlands, it's funny because as you said that we're like, there's not that much to talk about. Well, the Shade and Pat do not spend that much time in the Shadowlands either, because the last time we visited the Shadowlands, Cindy was there for a long, long time. Oh, yeah. And McKnighter was there for years. Like, we're talking an extremely long time. And that's why...
Like decades.
Like, their trauma was more profound. And their nightmares were, like... It emphasizes just how much, like, difficulty these characters are going through when they're told... Like, when Courtney learns that they have to go through it every single day for a very long time. So for the Shade, who specifically is so well known for indifference, has to go and see just one or two sad scenes from his life, you know, for one day in the place where he already lives, he's not afraid of, is like, that just doesn't cut it.
I don't think he lives there.
No, he doesn't live
I don't
think there,
but he has like constant access to it.
He's not afraid of
it.
He's not afraid of it. Like, he just, he's like, this is a place that I have access to. And
he can leave
the Shadowlands in its purest form is supposed to be just darkness. Is that not his powers? So why is he not scared? I don't really get it. Shouldn't he be able to see the Shadowlands in his pure, in the pure form?
Yeah, I don't really know what the deal was with that, but
whatever. It's fine. So they go to the movie theater because the Shade's like, oh, I've been here, done that, I can get us out. And of course it says on the movie theater sign board, temporarily closed because he can't get in. So that doesn't work. And he spends quite some time dissing Pat for what he kind of basically alludes to being dumb and annoying.
Useless.
And useless.
Yeah, yeah, no. I love some casual Pat negging.
From the Shade, though.
If
the kids aren't not from Sylvester.
If the kids, if the kids aren't there to do it, somebody else needs to.
This entire
I think it's
episode.
Okay to make fun of Pat as long as you're not Sylvester.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Sylvester doesn't really have a place to do that.
Yeah,
that
because whenever anyone else does it, it's genuinely out of, like, fun, you know? But I feel like when it's Sylvester, he's doing it because he's a sucky person.
And he's been doing that's it his whole life. It's like he doesn't know how to treat Pat with respect in the first place. Like, he just reverts to that dynamic. But speaking of, I'm surprised. I mean, I'm glad that he's not in it because we needed a break. But,
oh, my God.
But I'm surprised that Pat's fears don't include Sylvester in them at all.
I know.
Mm-hmm. When
well, maybe it's because he's alive currently. I think that maybe if it was in the past, it would be different. And we would get a cameo from him if he was still dead.
With all of the bullying that Sylvester has done to him in just the first three or four episodes of this season. Okay. It's interesting because his dad says in the scene that we're going to get into later, his dad says, oh, you're never going to be a leader. You're not strong enough. You know, stuff like that. Does that not directly apply to the relationship that he has with Sylvester, that he's going to have to stand up to him like much more firmly and basically become the real proper leader of the JSA again and not let Sylvester be the one who's leading the JSA? So I feel like
but I don't think that that's even Pat's goal. So it's like,
I feel like it, but it's like, it's, I don't know, because in one sense, like, not necessarily straight up that he's being told this, but from just the way that you witness how the season is unfolding, Pat was, he was, like, the adult figure for the JSA, and he just got soft replaced, and he just let it happen, and he didn't really, like, he just fully stepped aside and kind of went, whatever, instead of being a presence in any of the other kids' lives except for Courtney, right? So that's a little bit odd, especially with how involved he was in season one for specifically the Yolanda, Rick, and Beth. So I feel like that has to come into play again later on. I'm not sure, though.
I mean, we're all pretty sure that Sylvester is going to... So I feel like Pat's gonna get that claim regardless, but I guess so we do jump on over to Todd, who is still like a shadow demon thing, and
are we
like,
jumping over the Helix 6?
Oh crap, yeah, I am jumping over the Helix 6.
That's who they were.
Yeah,
like the Cheryl Blossom and the other girlie,
Penny Dreadful
is what Adiba is referring to.
It looks like Cheryl
in the comics.
Yeah, and Critters.
I'm
the
so
dog,
sorry.
And
I did not know that
Yolanda's cousin, continue. The shark.
The shark that you told me about. I know.
Yes.
I know that cousin.
Yes, so
Karchar or whatever his name is.
He's part of the Helix 6.
I didn't.
I don't think that he's going to be her cousin in this.
Absolutely not. Of course not. And if they do, I'm going to laugh myself for like 5 minutes. And please put it in
I
the
think
pod.
It would be fun if you laugh as a cousin. We really don't get well, to see much of her like extended Alex. Family.
But we don't. But like they haven't confirmed no, they one could, way or the other. Be, it could be her brother. I want Alex it to be her brother. Is her brother or not?
I want it to be her brother. But yeah, no, they haven't.
I prefer it to be her brother. In the comics, they were cousins.
I want it to be her brother too. In which case, we deserve more Alex content because Yolanda's really going through it. And he was supportive, so we should see more Alex, because it makes it seem like her whole family hates her, which is not true. Okay, so let's go back to Todd. We spent a moment about Helix 6. Let's go back to the main character here. The main character of Helix that we actually care about. So before we start, I just want to blanket admit that I think they went really, really hard on Todd's backstory and the angst and everything like that in the beginning of this episode to then just drop it
entirely.
Yes, and I was like, mm-hmm. was that necessary? Yeah. Like, I know, we know that well, his father was abusive in the comics right. and everything, but
what I don't understand is the mechanism of what they did with it. Because, like, why was he there? Like, I initially thought, oh, this is going to be interesting because the Shadowlands are spilling over into the real world. Mm-hmm. So, like, Courtney and Wasn't Jenny well and everybody are going to see their fears, too. But it's not. It was just, like, he conjured up his own personal Shadowlands for, like, 2 seconds. And then Jenny touches him and then everything explodes. But that's, like, not even clear. Like, I couldn't even process that. I mean, it didn't make because sense. It cuts immediately to commercial.
And it's just, I mean, it was really... That felt like almost equivalent to the Beth getting hurled hate crime racist yeah. stuff to her face by Eclipso. Like, that level of, is this really necessary? And the difference here is that in Beth's episode, she got to reclaim, you know, the narrative in some sense. Because that was, like, she was given the chance to fight, respond back. Here, we just had Todd totally paralyzed by that. And then knocked out, and then turned into another shadow, and then he was very cool and collected at the end of this episode, which totally surprised me, because the Todd that I know from the comics is a very angsty, brooding teen guy, like, which makes sense, given the backstory that he has, right? So I'm just a little bit mm-hmm. confused with his personality. And last episode, he did seem very angry and angsty, which, again, totally justified. So mm-hmm. I don't know why he seems like the most well-adjusted teen boy of the entire ISA and JSA so far on Stargirl. But whatever, it's fine. It's a choice.
So then Courtney wakes up in Nurse Love's office. Presumably she's not being contained because she doesn't have like inherent powers, is what mm-hmm. we learn later. But basically the whole conversation with Nurse Love is kind of just like, oh, we're actually not doing bad things here. Todd is actually super dangerous. Nurse Love explains, or doesn't explain, but Nurse Love is pretty explicit in that she knows who Courtney is in terms of her being Stargirl. And obviously later on we find out that she knows basically everybody's identity, or at least I think that we do.
How does but she know?
Really? Because they did research apparently.
Okay, but like
that was
research would lead you to figure that
well,
out.
Well, they did say that they were interested in Blue Valley because they were heroes and villains living together. So honestly, that cliffhanger was a red herring because we assumed this entire time that they were responsible for the cameras when we find out later that they weren't. And so I guess this plot point is good in that it tells mm-hmm. us that they weren't the people that set those up. But like, if you didn't include them at all, then we would not think that they did the cameras. So.
Now,
I don't know.
This is really random. But what if whoever's behind the cameras is actually Mr. Bones' arch nemesis? I didn't say.
Does he have an arch nemesis?
No, yeah, I have no idea. But I'm just saying because he was making a little puzzle, right, with the skull on it, and it's like, if that's not you, wouldn't it make sense that might be the person you want to beat? In the sense of like maybe like, Mr.
Sense.
Bones has
I
this way of doing it. And then this other person has a complete opposite way of doing it. And he wants to, like, or they, I have no idea, but whoever they are wants to just, I don't know, attack Mr. Bones is a way of, like, for example, like, Mr. Bones is like, oh, everyone needs to be super isolated. You never talk to anybody. You just do things all by yourself and you never see the light of day. And meanwhile, this other guy's like, I'm going to make sure that I can see everything that everyone is doing and then maybe cause problems on purpose because I want to see.
I will cause problems on purpose.
Because I want to see the mess it's going to make. That's the opposite of what Mr. Bones wants to do. Mr. Bones says, no one can interact with each other. I'm going to put them in separate rooms like it's a dollhouse. And then I'm going to leave them there and so that they can never cause mess. And then this other guy's like, oh, I'm making mess. So they could be, I mean, like, technically enemies.
I see that, honestly. That's such a random theory. Makes a little bit more sense to me.
Oh, did we get to Jade? Jade, well, they never called her Jade.
They
never called her Jade in this episode. Oh, what's the point? If you don't call them Jade and Obsidian, like, come on.
So we go back to the Shadowlands, and for an inexplicable reason, they have the gambler in the Shadowlands.
That's so true.
Right, he's so there.
I'm very confused. Like, get that paycheck. 100% get that paycheck.
Yeah, Eric,
support
you.
Support you, Eric Goins. But, like, I don't... I genuinely don't understand. Because the Shade's not traumatized by that.
The Shade does not truly care about the gambler.
Unless he did kill the gambler. And, like, a part of his, like, guilt.
He did not.
Yeah, I know, but I feel like it would make sense now.
See, if that was
what?
The case...
No, it would not.
I feel like he just accidentally killed the gambler.
That's totally not what happened.
Oh, I know. But, like, what other reason does a gambler have for being there? Unless Pat killed him.
Pat did not kill him.
He could. Adiba. Pat could totally kill the gambler. I believe in him.
Pat? I'm trying to think of characters Pat could kill.
The gambler.
Pat could kill Mike. Pat could kill
the gambler.
No, I don't know. Well,
Pat could totally kill the gambler. Why is Mike your first thought? Why would Pat kill Mike?
Because Mike can't do anything. Mike can't. Well, I'm not saying he would. I'm saying he could.
Who Mike would kill? Is that what we're talking about now?
No. Mike already has a body count. We're not talking about Mike.
It was an accident.
Who Pat? Not Pat would. Pat could.
The gambler.
I don't know. This is a more interesting topic of conversation than half. Yes, actually,
you're just
so right. You're so right.
The actual episode kind of sucks. Glad we moved past.
Stop.
Pat would totally kill the gambler. I totally think it's a possibility.
That dude, he could kill him.
Oh, he could totally kill that dude.
I know that they're walking on Main Street, and that's why the gambler's in the diner. But, like, they should have had the gambler in his trailer, and that's where they should have went. It would have, because that's where he died. It would have, like, just having the gambler turn around in the diner. It's just so, first of all, it reminds me of the Joey scene from Courtney's experience in the Shadowlands, which makes me laugh. Because that one was also, like, not scary. It just made you laugh. And this one also made me laugh. So
basically all of them made me laugh in some capacity.
Yeah. Okay. That's all I had to say about that part.
We do get the Pat father backstory, which didn't think that was going to be a thing, but okay. And basically it's Pat. I mean, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but Pat is a disappointment to his father, but he doesn't resent his father is what he keeps saying to himself. And I do feel like that's a very characteristic of Pat that he wouldn't. So... you know, but the implication, obviously, with Mike later is that Mike is going to end up like Pat, except worse. I don't know. They could have. It was interesting execution.
Little glimpses of, like, Mike truly dealing with the resentment that he has with his family dynamic.
But that was all, like, season two. We haven't seen that at all this season.
No, we got it. I would say we got it just slightly a little bit with his conversation with Sylvester when he automatically snapped at him, oh, you mean you're JSA? I'm not. Because you just know that has that's tension that's, like, directed at...
But I think that's also more at Courtney, too, and not Courtney? Just Pat.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. Well, it's the family dynamics in general. It's interesting, too, because Rex said that she felt that, like, the Whitmore Dugans were the closest and most cohesive this season than any time before. And I guess in some way that's true. But there isn't that much change for Mike So it's kind of true for, like, the other Woodmore Dugans, not really true for him. It really is, though, rewarding to actually get that Mike Lore address. Like, first, like, do we have time to talk about the mom, like Maggie, or what?
Should we do that later when we get there?
Oh, yeah. Are we still on his dad?
Yeah. I mean, we're not on there. We can just pass it. Because they leave. They leave his father and Jenny Wake.
Wait, before... Okay, maybe I won't go into this because I don't understand America, so... But he's... Okay, his dad was clearly working on an army tank situation type car type thingy, right? Is it dated at all to a specific time?
I thought I saw 1940 on it at some point.
I thought it was old.
But then I saw that there were army tanks. Well, the Pat timeline.
Yeah, I know.
So for those of you who don't know, in the comic tie-in... It was fully revealed that Pat is actually from the 1940s and that the time tornado that I think Clock King sent them through brought them to the current day, or at least like the 1980s or something like that. But they almost like retcon it this episode. I mean, they definitely retcon it at the end of this episode.
I don't want to say that that's actually retconning, though, because in season one, they also had Pat make that video game reference also to the 80s or the 90s or whatever it was that didn't make sense. And then they still put it in later. Yeah.
What happened for some of them, so like Green Arrow and Speedy were of this time and they were sent back and then they were brought forward again. So I guess that's possible to have happened.
Right. Because Pat and Sylvester did spend quite a good chunk of time with the Seven Soldiers of Victory, and we don't know how long that lasted or how old they were when that happened or really any of those details.
So Pat goes through... Or Pat and the Shade go through a door that takes them from Pat's dad trauma to the Shade's sister trauma. And, like...
It was kind of funny. It wasn't really that emotional.
It was kind of funny. It was kind of funny. I'm sorry.
It was actually very funny. I giggled a little bit.
Don't let me die. Like, father.
Father.
You kind of made me laugh. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
She's, like British, father. And she's, like, one of those, like, old Victorian people.
Oh, did he not leave me?
And, like, all the nurses were like, wearing, father. Like, the little...
It's also like it's also just like funny because you know that they made it worse, mm-hmm. right? So like that's not actually what happened. So,
and could you imagine? I feel like in some ways that's like insulting to the Shade. It's like he comes from that era, and the Shadowlands are like, oh, we're gonna make fun of the entire era mm-hmm. that you come from.
Well, I don't think that it was intentionally them.
I'm going to take it as it is, because that's how funny it is. I'm just going
to... It was just kind of absurd.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And I feel like, listen, if they could have done two things. They could have had the Shade truly not engaging or interacting with that whatsoever. So you just have the, oh, father, my brother, I'm dying, in the background, and he's just going, nope. Or they could have actually had him engage with his sister and... like, go to her bedside and be like, no, it's okay, it's all right, kind of thing. Kind of the way that Cindy did with her mom. In which case, at least there would have been a little bit more of an emotional connection. And then...
Right.
And then it wouldn't be as hilarious anymore. Or you could have had truly, truly the Shade go, I don't have time for this. The way that Cindy... Or, I mean, the way that Courtney did to Cindy in, like, season one, right? And just, like, I don't have time for this. And, like, just blast it and go away. But because you put him in this tricky spot in between, it's like he said, oh, I'm truly, like, incapable or whatever. I'm messing up the quote. But when he says he's not capable of having emotions or feeling anything, it's like, okay, but you're a liar. And we know that he's a liar. That's the point. But he also... wasn't like attached enough to the trauma that they showed him from our perspective, because he was more emotional in season two over this stuff, and even with Dr. McKnighter he was way more emotional. So it's like it didn't really feel like believable. I would have rathered him like actually just saying, I don't care for this, I don't want to look at this, I don't want to do this. So that it meant that he was trapped and that it really was Pat who had to, like, you know, get him at the end to face his fears, and not even face his fears, but maybe face like Pat Dugan fears. Now, do we get to Jenny waking up?
Yeah, technically we skipped over Jenny waking up because we did the whole Emily thing, which was a little bit after, but it's fine. So Jenny wakes up. It's a really cool shot. The shot of the episode, say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was incredible. I loved
it. The whole part and of her in that cell.
So Jenny is caught in the cell and she's trying to get out, and she uses a ring and it doesn't work because they have like this polymer or whatever that's coating it. That's like an anti superpower thing.
Like, it apparently suppresses your universally superpowers.
Works it's on all superpowers.
Yeah, apparently.
I don't know. But the thing that I don't understand, they talk a lot about Jenny when they say like, oh, and Todd and all these other Helix kids have this innate power that they can't control. But the thing with Jenny is that she's like a battery, is what they established for the ring. But if you take the ring off and like throw it into the sun, Jenny is not going to have any powers anymore, correct? Like in this canon. I don't know how that works.
I'm not sure if that's true anymore after she exploded and she started to fly.
You think it's different now?
I think like she can help channel her abilities through the ring, but that she doesn't even need, I literally, this may be like a hot take, but I don't think Jenny actually needs the ring in the same way that Todd doesn't actually need anything to become Obsidian, because otherwise how does that make any sense?
I actually really like that theory,
counterparts of each other. Because okay, also that reminded me that Jenny did not fly again, which made me sad.
Yeah, I was gonna say they really had Jenny fly for like 1 second in the second episode of season two, and then never again.
And they had the CW flung to the ceiling. Like, could have had her fly after
him. The CW can afford harnesses.
They were sold for $0. You really think they're paying for a harness so they can make some girl fly?
HBO Max would pay for
that. They're paying for a harness to make Hunter fly, and his character can't even fly in the comics. So like,
those are stunts. It makes things interesting. No, I know
they're stunts. Clearly,
they're all stunts. What do you mean?
What are you talking about?
Does ZW being bankrupt?
Okay, but
no, I know, okay. But
it's fine. Yeah. So I think that Jenny does have actual powers, regardless, separated from the ring. How that makes sense, I don't quite know.
Well, does she? Is that it in the comics?
In the comics,
I honestly don't know enough about
her. Their mom
her.
Is also now. I told.
Well, I know. Yeah, Rose Canton is like somebody.
Yeah. So I don't know if maybe that's where they're pulling it from, but I think maybe it could also just be with the fact that it deals with, it's controlled by their emotions, you know, and their emotions are unpredictable, and how, I mean, you can argue that Rick's emotions very much causes a lot of damage when he has the hourglass on. However, the damage is constrained to his own body, whereas Jenny can literally set an entire town on fire. Not even her own dimension. True. So that is a high level risk. And I think, you know, the fact that Todd has the same abilities with zero object to control or ground him should say that because she's his twin and they got their powers at the same time, that it should be the same for her. I'm going to just kind of end it there. It wasn't made explicitly clear, but I don't see any other reasoning.
We move on to Courtney, who is monologuing to Mr. Bones.
It's camera.
Really funny because she's really bad at it. Like,
I wouldn't say she's like, bad at like, it.
I would say that she's
Mr. Bones
bad at it.
Didn't care a I wouldn't word say that, that she said. Like, Mr. Bones went, oh, yes, sure, definitely. Maybe she's right at the end. But also, no, he didn't. He's still keeping all of those kids there locked up in total isolation, and he's, well, like, you know.
This is the specific part where we do get the whole, like, explicitly, like, people who have innate superpowers versus people who do not.
This was Stargirl's anti-discrimination episode. In the weirdest way.
That's a joke. I felt it. I thought it was so bizarre for them to be speaking of it like that, and then to not at any point have her mention Cameron.
I know.
Because, like, it clearly they're, like, going there with that. Like, she would Because that's the same approach that she gets for everybody. She's just like, focus on your positive emotions and everything will be great. And like, I don't know. I felt like there was a point where she would be like, oh, well, actually, I've experienced taking a threat to zero. So like, mm-hmm. Mr. Bones, I'm kind of better than you. Like, I really thought that she was going to do that. And she didn't. And I kind of wish that she did. Yeah. I kind of wish that she did, just so when it blows up in her face, she could be like, Mr. Bones might have had a point.
That's mm-hmm. kind of funny.
And she would be wrong, but...
As a sociologist, I find what they've done a choice, because they have Courtney being the one to tell Mr. Bones... sucks that your life was in such a position that you were born in a way that no matter anything you do, no matter what, and you absolutely have zero control over this. This is coming from Courtney, a little white teenager, to Mr. Bones, who is not only a skull man, but he's played by a black man, okay, on top
of it. He is actually black, like in the comics.
And don't get me wrong, what he's doing is wrong. But it's mm-hmm. wrong because Courtney is able to do things her way. And therefore, Mr. Bones should be able to automatically relate to her worldview. The problem with that is that it just, when you have that as an allegory to, you know, people are different and some people are made fun. Like, some people, like, you know, are discriminated and prejudiced against for things out of their control. But you're also, like, very clearly using the show's most naive, running over people's, like, expressed opinions and stuff mm-hmm. like that character to be the one to do that. Courtney is great at empathizing, but at the same time, this season, she's not even empathizing with her own friends very well.
Yeah.
So it kind of feels like she's not the right person to be giving this speech. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Courtney's not allowed to tell Mr. Bones these things because she's white, because I don't believe that. But I'm just saying that because of all the choices that she's made this season, the fact that she never mentioned, Cameron, like what Cam says, and on top of that, she's just this kid girl who's, like, kind of just totally, like, the show totally just lets the clear racial symbolism that could be interpreted out of this conversation mm-hmm. ignored is what makes it odd. That's it. That's basically my rant over. It's just odd. Okay, so moving on, we have that happen. And I mean, what was the point of the conversation exactly? Like, what did she get out of that conversation? Just the fact that, oh, you know, not everyone are relics.
Well, she got, I somehow missed this on both watches of this, but she somehow is let out of the room after that to go find Jenny.
Yes. So he does.
So that's what she got out
of. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So she does that. She goes to visit Jenny.
Well, actually, no, I think there's first. A couple scenes in between there. Yeah. So we go to Pat, and he's getting the trauma with Mike and Barb. So it's first like Barb telling him he's a bad dad, although not at all saying that he's a bad husband, and not at all referring to him being a bad dad as him enabling Courtney and a bunch of other people's children to endanger
There's
their lives.
Zero Courtney in here, mm-hmm. which I was like,
I thought that was weird that because was a she's choice. In the episode. So like, just let her in and be like, Pat, I actually resent you and hate you. And how dare you bring Sylvester into my life and ruin everything? And how dare you not support me and my boyfriend? And how dare like, none of that.
Oh, you just had but the you entire literally, script ready.
But you literally, well, that because that's it's easy to do, because there's a lot of reasons for Pat to mistakenly believe that Courtney is not, because Courtney
she's
didn't like him
girl,
to begin with.
Like,
so like,
who already is pretty upset. Like with a lot
but
of
like,
people
we,
for not listening
we,
to her,
we,
so
we
it's
take,
very easy.
We take current Courtney and Pat for granted, and I love current Courtney and Pat, because I was not a fan of Courtney being so rude to Pat all the time in the beginning. Like it was hard.
I did really like it.
Watch.
It was fun. It was funny.
But
after a while, her attitude was getting rough.
But
really
my
like
point being,
characters.
My point so, being, fun. Is that. If they were ever going to do that again, earnestly, like, you could mm-hmm. have Courtney do that. And I think that it would be a very Pat thing to believe, oh, she's doesn't actually genuinely like me. She is just doing all these things to save face for her mother and save face for the rest of the JSA. And in reality, she resents me.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after this was last season, whatever. And obviously that's not true, because we've seen on multiple occasions why that's not true and how she genuinely loves him.
I mean, just but in this very episode, she called him my dad. So that could have been a clear distinction.
But it would have been so nice to have that. The whole... Okay, so it's mostly focused on Mike. So they basically are like, Mike doesn't like you because you are very similar to your father, and that you're very critical of Mike, and you don't let him take charge and whatever. And then also they're like, and Mike's mom left him. They do something that's kind of funny in the editing where they're like, Barb shouldn't even be here. And then she just like disappears.
She just disappears.
Also,
that's painful because it says that, oh, she'll never really be his real mom. When yes. we've had Mike specifically call Barbara his mom. Like, mm-hmm. in the last mm-hmm. two seasons, you know that the relationship between Mike and Barbara are actually really good compared to his relationship with Pat.
Right.
And that's kind of sadder if you, like, you know that it wasn't like when Mike was a baby. He was 3 or 4. Like, you know your that's mom. If they're 3 or 4 years old, it's not like mm-hmm. he was 1 year old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they explain that his mother left him at a soup kitchen and Pat, like, picked him up or whatever and raised him from there. Which implies that Pat wasn't part of Mike's life for the first 4 or 5 years. And that makes sense. Why? Well, no, it doesn't actually make sense because they say in the JSA Death Day thing that Pat has a son at home.
Okay, but that could be after. That couldn't have that been. Well,
that was 2010. That was 2010. So if it's 2021 in actual canon timeline.
11.
No, it's 2020. It's 2020. It's 2020. It's 2020 in actual canon. It's 2020 in the actual canon. It's 2021 in the fake canon that they like spilling lies to us. Either way, that was 10 years ago. So if he's 14, he would have been 4 at the time. So he would have just picked up.
Which would be, that would explain why, just picked up. But that would explain why Ted literally said, you have a kid at home, as if that's new mm-hmm. information to remind him about. However, it seems so out of character for Pat to not be active in his own son's life.
Yeah, I don't mm-hmm. know. I don't know if we're ever going to address that more. I feel like they really only put it in this episode because people were like, we want to know Mike's mom's backstory, and then they were like,
but I've heard now, I know you don't agree with this, but some of it's my theory, I guess, too. But if she dropped Mike off at a soup kitchen, I don't know. Something tells me, like, couldn't that have been, like, a Veterans Affairs kind of soup kitchen kind of situation? So, like, this boy was actually just dropped off, like, at a soup kitchen, maybe at Pat's work, in the sense of, like, maybe Mike isn't even Pat's kid, like, biologically. It's kind of a little bit iffy.
It's possible, but I feel like because in comic canon it's not, I'm gonna say no.
Oh yeah, it doesn't make sense that Pat would not be in Mike's life at all when he roasted the gambler for not being in Becky Sharp's life. He was like, right. Oh, you want to show up and be a father after so-and-so. And then it's like, but Pat Dugan, if you did the same thing, like, who are you to tell, like, what?
I think that it's possible that, I think my final answer as to what happened is that he had a wife. The wife lived at home or whatever.
Unless they were exes already. What if they were already divorced?
Well, they had split custody.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
And then she just left him somewhere and he had to go find him.
That makes sense. I will accept that. That will also be my final answer, because otherwise it doesn't make sense.
We go over to Jenny and Todd reuniting. There was a brief scene that we didn't talk about that was Jenny and Courtney, and Courtney was like, it's fine, you can touch him again because power of love. And then they do exactly that. The power of love.
my favorite line in this entire episode is when Courtney, with a lot of attitude, says to Jenny, "Do you want to hurt him?" And she just shakes her head, like, "Nope, nope, nope, I don't." And she goes, "Then you won't." And it's just so funny the way that that delivery was done. I don't know why so much attitude went in there. And it was like Jenny was a little bit scared of Courtney in that moment. Like,
so Jenny gets to Todd, and they have this whole sequence. So, like, they reunite in the physical real world.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go into this weird pocket dimension thing that, like, it's, like, not quite the Shadowlands, but it's not real, like, quite real world, where it's the two of them, like, in that old home or whatever, where they were pulled apart from.
The foster home, yeah.
Yeah, that's the word. And they are basically like, "Oh, no, we can't touch. Yes, we can." No, I'm doing the voices wrong. "We can't touch. Yes, we can." And they decide to hug. Well, specifically, Jenny puts the darkness energy that was in her ring back into Todd somehow, and that fixes the Shadowlands so that without any repercussions, the Shade and Pat are able to automatically come out, which makes no sense, but fine. It was like, what is the purpose?
It looks nice.
Why did they put them in there if it was going to be so easy to get them out?
It just looks nice. I'll take it as the vibes, the aesthetic. It was what it was. Yeah, what were we going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that this episode kind of feels like a bottle episode. So they didn't actually know what they were doing, like, specifically with the plot, or like how people were going to get out of the Shadowland or go in there. They kind of just, like, did it, you know? Because I feel like the bigger, better things are coming in, like, other episodes. So they were like, let's just put this one together.
But it's just so funny how balls to the walls next week's episode is going to be. And oh, that's going to be incredible. How every other episode is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, what? Like, out of nowhere. Like, the plot was super fast-paced in 5, 6, 7, 8, nothing happens. And then it's back to 9, 10, 11.
Like, they're trying to prepare us.
I think it's kind of a flop to have such a well-ensemble-casted episode 7 as the part 1, and none of the key players show up in part 2.
Right.
Because it's supposed to be, like, part 1 and part 2 are supposed to be, like, a story, like, you know, like, and
like the Jenny storyline in part 1 was barely in part 1. So I know. It's like,
and the thing is, the reason why I'm fine with it is because, and I still stand by this, when I think of Infinity Inc., I think of Rick, Beth, and Yolanda, and technically Sylvester, being their own group aside from Courtney. That's what I've always been assuming that Infinity Inc. stood for, and that's what it's going to be. And you know what? That's still happening after this episode, and that's why I'm happy, because we clearly see based off the promo that that's still the status quo. So technically, you know, when we return next week, nothing would have changed back in Blue Valley. So that's okay. But then why call this the part Infinity part, like, blah, I can't speak anymore. Why is this Infinity Inc. part 2? Technically, it feels like next week's is Infinity Inc. part 2. What?
Yeah, so the reunion happens, and it's like flashing between them as kids and then them as adults, and they hug, and then that's really it. They come back, Pat and Shade are back, which I said before. I think I messed up, actually, but it's fine. And then we have the whole, like, ending the ending sequence where they're saying goodbye to the Helix Institute. So the Helix Institute Nurse Love is basically like, all of these kids are
skip? Pat and the Shade escaping the Shadowlands, and Pat basically telling the Shade, "You could choose to die now, or you could choose to die later." And then the Shade finally
respecting. Well, I thought that was tied in directly with what Jenny and Todd were doing. I skipped that scene because I didn't really find it that interesting.
It's not
interesting
necessarily, but it's just the first time that maybe the Shade actually respects Pat.
Okay,
so that's why
that's true.
Yeah, But I laugh at the urgency in which they run out of the house. Like, the fire isn't actually coming for you. Like,
it's in the wall.
No, the shade. No, the shade was specifically getting attacked by the fire. I don't know why the fire was so temperamental. Well, I do know why the fire was so temperamental to the shade, because it was attacking darkness. But, like, yeah, no, the fire was 100% targeting him. That was why it kept happening.
It's funny.
But, yeah, no. Anyway, we get to the end of the episode stuff. So Nurse Love is like, all the Helix kids are here on their own volition. And Todd is like, yep, that's totally true. Courtney's like,
I'm sorry. This kid, what teenager is going to subject themselves to 6 full months of nonstop torture and then be like, oh, yeah, I chose that for myself, and be like nonchalant about that? Like, it's just. Todd, are you okay? Because it just was so weird. It was just so weird the way that he said that. Like, I feel like, I don't know, I'm surprised. Like, I'm not surprised that he was held by his own, you know, he was manipulated into being told that he was going to destroy the world, so obviously he was going to stay there. But it's just the totally, like, non-serious way that he delivered that line threw me for such a loop.
He literally was like, I feel like the way he talked about that entire experience was like he was just doing like a little bit difficult math exam. Like, that's all.
Yeah.
Like, to him, it kind of just like,
he like, should have been the one to say the last word.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been like, peace out, Helix. Not coming to you guys again, because you did this to me when there were other choices. Not a fan of that. Maybe you should check yourself. Goodbye. Right. He should have done that. That would have been nice. But it was just such a soft exit.
It was. It was like, oh, well, I mean, they don't, like, technically keep people hostage.
Also, I just realized, we're not going to get to see him use anything offensively. Like, I mean, I guess you could say that it was offensive when he couldn't control it. But, like, you're not going to actually see him in action at all. And that's really sad, actually.
Pat voluntold the shade to help Jenny and Todd and be their mentor figure. And disclaimer, I like the idea of the shade mentoring Todd. I literally mentioned it last episode because he's the perfect person to do that, obviously. But I don't agree with forcing people, because this is the second time that Pat is forcing someone who's probably not actually that great of an influence to be mentors to kids. He did it with Sylvester, and I think that was a horrible idea. And now he's doing it with the shade, and I just don't get it. Because Pat usually is a good sense of character. Like, he knows when someone's, like, a good idea or a bad idea to have around. And he just gave, like, two people, like, oh, yeah, totally come into these young, impressionable people's lives and be their role model. And it's, like, interesting.
Yeah. They also mentioned that Jenny found Todd because she was in cahoots with Sandy Hawkins, who is Sand in the comics. He's like a sand man.
And that's
like, he's not the Sandman. He's a man made of sand.
Oh, so it's not like the dude from the Netflix show.
Different Sandman, but yes, same continuity. They're related. I don't actually, I this is where I tuck a piece of hair behind my ear and say that I've watched one episode of Sandman on Netflix it was not for me, so I turned it off. But I know that they're like related. I think it's more related to Wesley Dodds, but I don't know. I don't know. But it is like within the same family of characters. They're related.
I do like the line when the shade says, "I agreed to help two children, not three." As if. Also, Richard, you totally volunteered to help the other Richard. What happened? You just literally disappointed Rick for no reason. And then he totally did that on his own will. Like, he just decided to mentor Rick and help him out there with the whole Grundy situation. And then afterwards he's like, ew, helping children. Why would I ever do that? It's like, what do you mean? You just, it's so silly.
But they go off to New York, which is noteworthy because that's where the comic JSA.
Well, right.
That's where the comic JSA is.
I just got to ask. It says, I think if Jordan is back, then it could be Grundy committing the crimes if he has the ability to control him. The theory has always been that Icicle was the one commanding Grundy, and he'd know how to reanimate him better than Rick, and maybe even the Shade. Jordan being the killer doesn't make sense for the crime scene wreckage, but it does if he's letting Grundy play attack dog.
Okay, I'm actually going to include that in there because we should segue to that. So the ending is like, it reveals the killer. Well, actually, there's a bus scene that Courtney's like, yeah, I'm going to teach everything with solving the power of darkness with lightness, which is, whatever. But
says, let's continue. I don't feel like talking about my trauma because it was actually painful for me, unlike you and your...
Yeah, basically. But then we get this mysterious killer who punches a TV.
At Rick, specifically.
At Rick, specifically. And, like, I was not under the impression that that was Icicle. I assumed that it was some rando, potentially Protagaton. But the thing is, we do have the synopsis for 311.
Okay, if you don't want spoilers, maybe
we're gonna talk about like next week's promo
and the week after that
talk about this in sequence. So if you're watching this to be completely spoiler free, bye.
Thanks for listening. Next week, and then you can join us in again next week. But yeah.
All right. So we know that somebody from the JSA's past shakes up the dynamics of the entire town, which really only sounds like Jordan, because Jordan was the only person
who had
a position of power. So like very clearly that would mess up, and it's called the haunting, so presumably.
And he said, I will haunt your family forever in the Eclipso scene to Barbara.
So my new theory is that whatever thing revived Sylvester revives Jordan as well, and is doing it to, I guess, manipulate Cameron and the McKent grandparents, if they're still in the picture, to also be on the side of whatever he's doing. I'm confused because I'm fully on board that Sylvester is like a sleeper agent for something, but I don't know, whoever is in the tunnels, I think, is who revived Sylvester and who will revive Jordan.
Can you imagine if it's Brainwave?
I don't want it to be
Brainwave. I love that man as a villain, but not after all this. Yolanda would just combust.
She would leave town.
Yolanda would vine boom sound.
Yolanda would hide under the covers.
Take all her diner money, with us. Walk right to the airport, and just leave the country. She'd be like, I'm not even finishing high school.
She's going to spend her entire college fund.
Throw a dart on a ticket. Map, go to wherever, whatever country that lands to. So I guess we'll work our way backwards. So the 10 description has something to do with Sylvester and Pat rallying because Mike and Jakeem have made some discovery.
Which will be at the
battle
very
lines
end.
Have been drawn.
All right. Yeah, for sure. That's which what means that, which, that happens at fighting? The very, very end of episode 9. Clearly. Because it's going to spill over into episode 10.
Okay, so episode 9. Is what we've been waiting for, what I have been waiting for, at least, for this entire season. Yeah. Because, like, way, way, way back then, in, like, May or April, whatever the day was before the Legends of Tomorrow got canceled, sorry, I only remember it as that because I made a joke about it, but whatever the day before that was, it was National Superhero Day. So, of course, you've seen the photo of, like, Hunter and Cameron Gelman dressed up. Yeah. So I saw that and I was like, Okay, that's gonna be my personality for the rest of my life. So I, you know,
we all knew it was coming.
We all knew that it was going to come after that. That was kind of shocking to see, because based off of the 1-205 scene, I don't know if I would have escalated it in my head.
We all knew it was coming after we saw that picture, is what I meant.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I am just so, so excited for it. Like, and it looks like, it's so funny. Like, it's just the JSA crashing into the McKent house and then beating them all up. It's just such a funny imagery.
Just to break it down into literally what that means. It means a girl goes to visit her boyfriend and her three best friends decide to break in, kicking the door down, to fight this boyfriend's grandparents. So
that's insane.
And the boyfriend, in the case of Rick Tyler,
chased around a big mansion by a grandfather, mm-hmm. and then another girl doing flips in the hallway, trying to run away from an evil grandmother, while you have a very, very angry, strong teen guy smash gigantic mahogany ladders and coffee tables, and literally lift the said boyfriend up to presumably smash him onto the ground. Because he hates snow globes.
By the way, we think that we can see the rest of the JSA in their own respective snow globes, and like the Courtney snow globe is repaired.
Yeah.
So like, shady business is going on in the household.
Funny,
I think that's a little bit more creepy than just having a snow globe of your crush. Not only do you have a snow globe of your crush,
if it's snow globes of your intended victims, I have to respect that. That's kind of camp.
That's kind of camp. It's called being a stalker, Cameron.
Yeah,
I'll defend him.
That's wild. and so then we know that Rick is so blinded with rage, mm-hmm. that he is seemingly also attacking Courtney, because in
proxy,
the promo,
yeah.
she's mm-hmm. right there in the room, and she doesn't have her staff. She does not have her staff. She was just going to visit her boyfriend.
When he smashes the ladder on to like Cameron, who makes like the ice shield or whatever, Courtney is right there. like it's like Courtney is like cowering, and Cameron is like holding on to her and like mm-hmm. defending her from Rick, who's going ham. And I do want to point out, because I want to be the first person who says this before people get likes on Twitter for saying the same thing that I thought. Okay, so I'm putting this out there. That is probably, like, the shape of that shield is probably to be like, oh, it's Courtney in the snow globe. Because,
ooh.
But he's protecting her with the snow globe instead of
harming her
with the snow globe.
That's mm-hmm. so smart. Also, I remember that, like, when we had that scene with Rick lifting the dumbbells, that's Rick literally
holding
up Cameron is in the exact same pose. Like, he practiced for that.
Cameron, who was windmilling around with his arms and legs. So funny.
But we didn't even mention that in the promo it says that Courtney's intention is to go and tell Cameron everything, just because
things
magically worked out with Todd and Jenny.
And this is so...
It's such a wild choice.
Which, granted, okay, like, your two options are don't tell him and tell him, basically. And I think not telling him is probably worse. However, don't tell him this in his own house with the evil grandparents.
Yeah.
Where he could freeze you to death and nobody would know. Like, do this either in your own home or in the middle of, a public place. Like, why
this could have happened at the diner.
To do this? It's also really funny because when you see, like, the shot of him, like, opening the door, he's, like, so happy to see her. And she's like, I hate everything about my life. But, yeah. if you look, word of advice, if you go to see your boyfriend and you look afraid and, like, you don't want to be there, maybe break up with your boyfriend.
Also, I just... It specifically says that Beth find something that prompts them to go into this battle. So what does Beth find, number one? Number two, did Beth sanction this heist that's basically about to go down? And three...
Excuse... Whoa.
You need to repeat that word.
I know. I know.
Okay. As long as it's not a weird thing.
No, I know. Let me start that over. Okay, so if she's... Okay, whatever. Moving along, they go into the house and they're looking for something. What is Beth's goal? Is she in there because her friend... Like, they clearly either decide before that they're going, or she's running in after them, realizing that her friends ran and decide to ambush them. But it seems like they, all three of them, really did...
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if Beth would agree for Rick to go slamming down the door in that way.
No, I think that the plan probably is we're going to sneak into the house and pull Courtney out when she, like, goes to the bathroom or something.
Yeah.
And then Rick got there and turned the hourglass around again and was like, what if I do this? And then from there, it's, like, emergency mode. Yeah. So Beth has to, unless Rick is legitimately, Rick and Yolanda are distractions, and Beth has to go in to get something.
That's actually hilarious.
That I would love that.
So and so she funny. Sanctioned this as a distraction because she was like, listen, we should probably break them up anyway. So
Rick would love that. Rick would be like, you're asking me to go and antagonize them? Say
and I think
no
that,
more.
I think that Beth in no way is saying you should slam a should ladder over this boy.
Yeah, she's not, she said distract him. She's not saying slaughter him. Go ahead. I gave you green light. That's not
it's
what
also,
she's saying, but he's going to take it as such.
Interesting because Courtney is exposing who they are.
Yeah.
Like, even if she... I feel like she's not going to have gotten to the point where she's like, yeah, my brother killed your dad, Cameron. Oopsie.
Oh, my God.
I'm in the JSA.
I
like, I feel like
when
it's
that
still,
conversation happens.
I feel like it's still not at that point when they break in. So I think that she's going to expose... who their true identities by being like, Rick, stop, because then Cameron's gonna be like, what do you mean Rick?
Oh,
you know
music,
that this is Rick,
the music. Oh, that's going
that'd
to
be so
that's
fun.
What I was gonna say, I was like wondering if Courtney was going to pretend that she has no idea who these people are and that she's pretending that they're lunatics and she's like, ah, and then that would be really bad because
no, it is gonna be bad because you're because Cameron is going to be betrayed. Cameron is going to be fighting for his life and defending her. And then he's going to be absolutely betrayed by this that she knew. Yeah, it's going to be a mess.
This is why
so
we can't have nice things.
I don't know why. I don't know how this is even going to resolve itself.
How do they even go to school together after that? How? Like, how? Could you imagine? Like, could you imagine Rick and Cameron being paired for a project after this?
Personally,
well, I think have to drop the course.
I think what's likely going to happen, my guess, would be that this is when Cammy's going to break up after this. And so Courtney is going to be heartbroken about it. And then Cameron's plot line is going to be like off to the side, like a Cindy type plot line, because now he's going to actually be villainous.
I guess. Yeah.
Whatever. And then it'll converge when Jordan comes back. So it'll be like for one episode, but we don't even know for sure if he's in
we
episode
we have to talk about
10.
The fact that episode
there's
10
no cast
has no cast list and then episode 11 does not have Rick in it. That is important because it implies something happens to him.
Yeah.
Potentially, and we don't know when. We don't know if something happens to him at the end of episode 9. We don't know if something happens to him in episode 10 because we don't know who is in episode 10.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is bad. I mean, we know that this whole hourglass situation was going to come and blow up in his face, but we don't know what is going. And also, we know that because of the way that the synopsis for episode 10 is phrased, that Courtney and the group, like, they regroup together, that whatever it is that happens in the end of episode 9, obviously, yes, Cameron would be actually very concerning if he still accepted Courtney after all that. So obviously she's back on the JSA, but will they actually be reunited as a team because of this fight? And if so, what's the dynamic like for that? Like, how does that go about? And also, we have Cindy coming back. So Cindy's not in this.
Yeah, Cindy's not in 9, I don't think.
But she shows up again in 11.
She's probably in 10 and 11.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm super excited for next week, though.
So. Oh, yeah. Next week's going to be so fun.
Wait, I was wrong. Wasn't I that... Isn't it part 1, part 2 at the end of last season for summer school? Weren't episodes 12 and 13 part 1, part 2?
No.
I'm not right. But, I mean, they essentially act...
Oh, Stars and Stripe. Oh. Not summer school. Summer school is part 1, part 2, part 3, part 4.
Yeah, those episode. Right. I mean, season 2 didn't have any titles.
Yeah, sorry, my bad, never mind.
I mean, okay. Stars and Stripe was...
Yes, up to sorry. Par,
that was pretty good, yes. Yeah.
So I was going to ask, because we know the name of the titles for... Do we think that it's really going to be, like, episode 12 self-contained, and then... Not self-contained, but... I don't know, just because episode 12 and 13 are literally the last two episodes, they should sort of serve as a part 1, part 2 big finale. But something tells me that it's not really laid out that way. I don't know. I feel like we're going to just get a super intense finale episode.
I don't know. But I'm excited for whatever we get. Because the ending of this... The end half of this season looks like it's going to be so stacked that it's not even funny. And that I'm going to be falling out of my chair every 5 seconds. I will say that it's kind of funny that they only teased Cameron being like bad, and not even bad, it was just vandalism, like, okay, but like he's only done like vandalism. One bad thing, you know what I mean? Yeah, like you would think that at some point they would have him like
do something else,
have something else that's like maybe like a little hint of him like. But, like, no, it's just...
But I would argue that the snow globe thing was still just a little weird.
It was a little sus, that's true, but...
but in terms of explicitly concerning, no, he hasn't really... Yeah, interesting. What I will say is I will be slightly disappointed if we don't get some sort of Our Night breakup, in the sense of, like, Beth totally drops Rick for his behavior, and then almost like 2 minutes after that, like, Rick just drops dead, almost, like, not drops dead for real, but like he needs like medical emergency attention, because that wasn't a proper sentence. He needs medical attention because whether or not his hourglass like gives him an overdose and his blood starts to like poison or whatever happens to him, or because Cameron actually freezes him. I don't know. I don't really care. I just, it would be so crazy if, you know, like, because Beth especially, like, being there for him, like, this entire time, and then she's like, I had enough of you, and then Rick gets upset, and then Rick almost dies, and then Beth is like, this boy almost died. Like, that would be a big Our Night situation that I think we would be waiting for. And I would like to see it.
I'm tweeting it. I'm tweeting the statement that I said that I wanted to claim. I'm gonna tweet that right now. So you can to the people that are listening to this, if you follow me on Twitter, you can see exactly the moment that we are recording this episode. Anyway, we should end this episode.
Yeah, we're done.
So thank you so much for listening. You can follow the show at Star Squadcast on Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr. You can follow me. I'm Cameron at Ice Hour Night on Twitter, or Blue Valley Breaking News on Tumblr.
I'm Tam, and I'm Hour Nights with an S on Tumblr, TKV Hour Nights on Twitter, and That Killer Vibe on Instagram. And don't forget, if you have weird theories, cool theories, or any questions, please send us your questions, because we would love to talk about it. Especially if it gets crazy.
Yeah, this actual stuff, if you do have questions for us about, like, our personal predictions for the end of the season, since we're getting up there, I would love for people to ask us. Although I feel like we're going to get pretty in-depth into our own theories.
We will.
I feel like...
But it'd be interesting to see what other people think. Like, this ask that I just got about Jordan and controlling Grundy, that's pretty cool. I haven't actually thought of that.
That's true, yeah. All right. Well... Goodbye. We will see you all next week after we have a cultural reset that we all witness.
We'll be screaming, crying, throwing up.
Bye.